Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Each episode, we're unpacking the brains of experts from around the universe.
COVID-19's had an enormous impact on all our lives. For some people, the financial effects are already being felt, with many job losses and people being placed in furlough. Is it possible to live with less money while making eco-friendly choices and having more time with your family? Today we're speaking to award-winning blogger and author of Eco Thrifty Living, Zoe Morrison, to find out. So welcome, Zoe. How are you? How are you finding lockdown?
I'm good. I know, like, lockdown is obviously, it's all been quite emotional and scary and up and down, but actually, you know, we're doing really well. We're really lucky.
So you're the author of
Eco Thrifty Living, same as the book I've written, yeah.
And what got you into that then?
So after I had my second child, I didn't want to go back to work because I had quite a long commute, and you can kind of carry on a bit with one child, especially when they're in nursery all day. But he was about to go to school, the older child, and I just felt a bit overwhelmed with juggling two children, a long commute, a career, being a mum, being house, like looking after the house, you know, all the jobs that you end up having to do. And so I decided I wanted to quit my job. I've always wanted to be an author, and someone mentioned blogging to me. And I wasn't even on Facebook or Twitter or anything at that point. And I decided, why not? I'll start up a blog and write about it. So I said to my husband, I really want to quit my job, and I want to be a stay-at-home mum / blogger. And he said, oh, well, but we've just moved house, and so our bills have gone up. And we've just had another child, so our bills have gone up. And, like, you know, when you have babies, they really drum it into you that organic is best and eco-friendly and natural. And you kind of, and even before that, I'd always been interested in the environment. So I was buying organic and eco-friendly and expensive products. So he's like, well, are you going to be prepared to compromise on that? Because, yeah. So he said, how are we going to be able to afford that? And I said, that's an excellent question. How can we be eco-friendly on a budget? And that's when I sort of started really focusing on how to save money, how to be eco-friendly. And I went back to work and I spent a whole year just obsessing over that question and getting up early, going to bed late, figuring out lots of things we could do and also ways we could make the money. And at the end of that year, I wasn't really in, like, I wasn't perfectly sure that we could afford it, but I had, well, we hadn't sort of implemented everything, if you like, but I had all these ideas and I really felt like it was going to be fine. So I actually asked my job for a sabbatical and they said no. So I said, fine, then I quit. And that's it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I think, I was saying to Katie earlier, actually, I think a lot of people in lockdown who are on furlough or who have lost their sort of office jobs and things and other jobs, they're kind of reevaluating what they want to do. Like, do they want to be stuck in an office full time? You're kind of, you know, you've got the time on your hands, you're experimenting a bit more, you're being more creative. So I think it's so brave if you, you know, kind of quit it and kind of reevaluate and live a different life. How easy was that for you?
Well, just going back to what you were saying, I was thinking that those years out really changed me, and I am sort of wondering how furlough is going to change people when they get that chance to slow down and rethink. So how easy was that for me? So I was just, you know, I really wanted to quit my job, so it was like a passion of mine. And it, when you enjoy something, it just doesn't feel like work, it doesn't feel like a hassle, it's just that it was actually fun, it felt like an adventure because I was learning loads of new things and doing things I didn't know about before.
It was good to think I could do. Maternity leave, Zoe, that you were learning new things when you were researching this.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, I'd discover FreeCycle and be like, oh, I can get things for free. And we got free trampoline and we got free scooters for our kids. I was like, that's quite nice. And someone gave us like a massive bag of kids' clothes that lasted us quite a few years.
What was the job that you were doing, just for the listeners to get an idea of the sort of contrast?
So I used to be an internal auditor. Mm-hmm. I would go around in the NHS. I would go around and interview people about systems and processes. So we'd go in and check that those systems were being operated as they should be. And we'd make suggestions for how they could be improved. So I feel like I turned my internal auditing skills in on myself. And I looked at all our systems and processes and I was like, well, what are we doing? How could we do it better? And I think internal auditing is a lot about questioning. And that's what I did to pretty much everything we were doing. Not like very, very gradually over a long period of time, because it could get very overwhelming if you do it all at once.
So what kind of areas of your life did you sort of go through the process of effectively auditing then to make this transition?
Oh, I think I started out with cleaning products and baby products, because they were sort of the ones I was buying into that were expensive and costing us lots of money. And I was like, well, like one of the first things I looked at was baby wipes. And I realised I was buying some eco-friendly baby wipes, but there was nothing really very eco-friendly about them at all. That were very comparable to the supermarket own brand, not eco baby wipes. And they were like even now they're about 70p more expensive. But they both come in a plastic packet. Neither of the baby wipes are biodegradable. And the only difference is they have two organic ingredients. So you're like, what a ripoff. Mm. You know, actually, there's nothing very eco-friendly about this. So I realised I was buying into greenwashing. And I think that's one of the first areas I looked at. And so I looked at all the kind of products we were buying, and I cleared out our cleaning cupboard. Got like on the back of all the cleaning sprays, it says toxic. And I'm like, well, is it good to spray my kids' high chair with these toxic chemicals? Because then they might be breathing them in and they might be sort of eating them a bit as they're putting their food on there. Or would I be better off using edible cleaning products like vinegar and bicarbonate soda that aren't toxic and don't have these horrible symbols on the back of it and don't come in a plastic packet or a plastic, well, I mean, you can get vinegar in a plastic spray bottle, but I'd buy it in bulk and refill it, that kind of thing. Definitely started off looking at cleaning products, yeah. Wow, which isn't a big money. Yeah, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, because a few weeks ago, you go to the supermarket, you couldn't even get hold of Dettol and all the kind of general cleaning products like that. So you're ahead of the curve. Have you got all your things you can make out of other ingredients people aren't even looking at, really, presumably?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I realised that I don't need to antibacterial spray my whole house, and that most of the time, like, a wet cloth will do. So I only really use cleaning products. Like, bicarbonate of soda is my favourite cleaning product ever, because if your child draws on your like laminate flooring with a Sharpie, you can rub it off with a bit of water, bicarbonate of soda.
Oh wow, oh my god, I think I might need to try that.
Like, bicarbonate soda removes tea stains from mugs. It like removes most marks from most, I don't know, it's generally not always, it doesn't always do the trick, but I love bicarbonate soda for getting rid of difficult stains and that kind of thing.
I think we've become, certainly from like the 80s, I remember my mum just scrubbing everything was so clean, and I think we've become overly clean, and actually that really affects our sort of system anyway, and we need to kind of build our resistance to things. And I was reading something about how we need to get more in touch with soil, because we need the sort of bacteria and stuff. But actually that helps our immune system, so we're kind of damaging ourselves by being over clean.
Well, it's like antibiotics kill everything, including the good stuff. And so, you know, antibacterial sprays kill everything, including the good stuff. And that's why we have the problem with the rise of superbugs. So, I sort of started out reading about all this stuff, going, oh, I don't need these cleaning products. Naturally, I only need to clean. I've got a friend who works in a hospital. She said, you don't need antibacterial products outside of a hospital, really, or unless you're like, there's something really dodgy that you need to antibacterialise. You don't need to routinely use it on anything and everything just for the sake of it. And like with the coronavirus, obviously they've said that the best thing to use is soap and water, so that is also a great cleaning product. One by one, I just went through lots of different areas and found lots of different ways to save money.
I was going to say, and I think you've raised a really good point in terms of like, it doesn't have to be an extreme, like I'm getting rid of everything. Like, you can just do little bits and pieces, do you know, and get excited about it.
So I didn't have to get rid of my cleaning products, and you know, you can try the new ones, see if you like it, and then decide if you want to stop using the other cleaning products. And I did go back to cleaning products when I couldn't find good replacements. I've never really worked out a good dishwasher tablet alternative. And because we do live in a hard water area, it's hard to sort of like clean your toilets without using live scale remover of some description. So there are some areas I kind of gave up on the eco cleaning in, and I definitely agree with you that people shouldn't feel overwhelmed or feel like they can't do it if it's not perfect, because there are no perfect solutions. Even reusables have their problems. It's just about, you know, taking it one step at a time and seeing what you can do differently and how, if it can be better than what you were doing before.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice message to make it more attainable for people. Like, so often you think of eco-friendly people, of people that are going to be people that are very extreme, very judgmental perhaps, and that paints them in a bad light when it doesn't have to be something like that you have to stick to rigidly, I guess.
Not at all. And I think, like, when I started, I did it step by step, because it was a learning curve and it's a culture curve, because like the first time I shopped in a charity shop, where I decided, you know, I sort of went from buying everything new to getting everything secondhand, and now to me that just seems normal. And I think in Brighton a lot of people would do that anyway, but before I started it, I wouldn't have thought of doing that. And it's kind of, you have to get over that hump of thinking it's fine, it's not a problem to go and buy clothes from a charity shop or to get secondhand toys, and actually it's good for the environment and it's going to save you lots of money. But it's changing your mind about things as well that takes a bit of time.
The fashion industry does seem to be pushing being environmentally friendly. However, I have been reading as well, for example, H&M have got like a conscious range, but I was reading that like some of their garments have got 4% of eco-friendly material in them, which really isn't a sort of miss-sell, isn't it, really? So I think people need to be quite cautious as well, that they're not buying into something that's just playing lip service.
And that is greenwashing, isn't it? Like with the baby wipes. And H&M, I don't know if they're still doing it or if, well, obviously things are different now, but they were doing a sort of take back scheme. I think M&S might have been doing something similar, where you take your old clothes in for recycling and they give you a voucher to buy something new. And it's very difficult with this being sustainable, because I would say that's an entry level activity. So if you're not doing anything else, then that's great. But the cynical side of it is that H&M are giving you a voucher to buy new clothes. So it's kind of like declutter and buy something new rather than make what you've got last. If you were eating meat 15 times a week, you know, to go to then eating meat like a couple of times a week would be a big deal. But if you were eating meat a couple of times a week, then you might want to think about becoming a vegetarian. And if you're a vegetarian, you might want to go become like only cheese and eggs one day a week or something. I don't know. There's always levels. So I think that there's companies are often doing entry level things, which there's lots of activities that could be good to raise awareness but aren't actually a good solution in the long run.
Are you vegetarian, Zoe?
So in January I did veganuary. Okay. And I wasn't a vegetarian or a vegan at all, because my family aren't, and I've never really pushed it. And that, like I say, it's a journey. When it comes to being eco-friendly, I would always put reducing food waste above being the vegan, because there's this list, I can't remember what it's called, but it sort of puts it in order of the things you could do to help climate change, and it has reducing food waste above being plant-based. So after lockdown and right at the beginning, I decided to not be a vegan, to use up the food we had in the house, that kind of thing. And I'd already decided before I became a vegan to not stay at it long term, but to be long term, to be a flexitarian, which is where you're mostly plant based but you're not strictly plant based because on that list as well, a bit further down, it also says like there's certain types of farming which are actually good as well, and it all depends on the way that the farms run as to how eco-friendly it is. And obviously there's loads of other reasons not to eat meat or fish or whatever, but I think it's, for me, a flexible approach works, and I'm mostly vegan, but not entirely. Yeah.
I suppose my only concern is people kind of think that being vegan or vegetarian is a lot more expensive. And it does amaze me sometimes that, I mean, I'm vegetarian, but I used to eat quite a lot of meat, but it amazes me if I look at sort of meat products, like how cheap some meat products are, and they're sometimes cheaper than a vegan alternative, and I just think that seems crazy. So it's hard to kind of convince people, I think, that it would be a bit cheaper, and I don't know how people would do that as well.
It's, I think the way you save money on food, which I endlessly write about on my blog, it's all about not wasting food, making things from scratch, buying things, you know, raw ingredients, buying things in bulk as well, which is, I know, a controversial issue at the moment. There's lots of different ways you can save money on food. And if you buy packaged food, it's probably going to be more expensive than the homemade stuff. And it all depends where you're shopping as well.
What would be your top tips then if someone was getting started and they think, I want to eat healthy food but not spend an absolute fortune on it, and I don't want to have a huge amount of waste at the end of each week or month and packaging that I'm throwing away?
So sorry, I'm like,
it's a massive
topic. About the answer and then I've lost the question. So I've just written so many articles. So bulk buying is something that I do, but I would only bulk buy long life foods, which you will be able to use up over time. Because if you bulk buy things that are going to go off quickly, that's just going to be end up with food waste. So you need to make sure you're going to be able to eat it. But that would pack. So if you went into a zero waste shop, for example, you can buy things out of a dispenser, but they would have come in a big packet anyway. So you can kind of cut out the middleman and buy your big packet. And if it's something you're going to eat loads of, like rice or something, you can save yourself a bit of money and it's got less packaging, and that's that. So another way to save money on food waste, to reduce food waste, is to portion size. I always weigh out pasta and rice, and every morning I generally have porridge for breakfast and I weigh out my porridge. So then you know you've got the right portion size, and if you're going to make extra, I do it on purpose, and then I know what I'm going to do with it. So like freezing leftovers, have a list of easy meals, have some bulk stuff that you can, some batch cooked stuff that you've got in the freezer. And I do a meal plan, and I do a shopping list off the back of my meal plan.
So organised, Zoe. I aspire to do that. I always do it for like a week, and then the next week it's just, I'll go to the little Tesco's.
What about if you're kind of chaotic like I am? Like, I'm not, I was going to say that maybe lockdown, because I've got more time, this is the time to start these habits. Because really, it's a kind of change when people are busy, and I'm kind of, I always grab food on the way and, you know, takeaways, and I'm terrible for that. And I'm just not good at spending lots of time cooking. So maybe as well, like, it's something that people kind of need to get used to, and this is a good time to do it.
Yeah. So I all, like, it took me years before I could bring myself to write a meal plan, because I'm quite disorganized. I used to get to 5:30 in the evening and go, oh no, what on earth am I going to make for dinner? And I thought that writing a meal plan would be this big convoluted thing where I'd have to sort of nutritionally balance and budget every meal and make sure that there was the perfect distribution of food across the week. But actually what I did in the end, I just wrote down a list of meals that I can cook. And that it might be beans on toast. I'm not saying that I do that every week, but if they're just realistic meals, they're not like anything fancy at all. I write down what we're having Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it might be that we're having a baked potato on Monday, beans on toast on Tuesday. So we're not, you know, like, and there'll be some meals in there that are a bit more tricky. So then the next bit of it is that I'm really big on is doing a use it up meal plan. So
okay, what's that?
So basically, it's like what happens first. But so let's say you start off with a shopping list. So you look in all your cupboards, you look in your fridge, you look in your freezer, you go, what have I got in there? Yeah. And what needs using up? Have I got a cabbage that's about to go off? Or have I got something in the freezer that's been there for 6 months? And then you write your meal plan on the back of that food you've got. So it can be quite fun sometimes, because you're like, oh, I've got some random pasta. We're going to have like a mixture of spaghetti and penne and something else for dinner tonight. And actually some of my best inventions have been from my use it up meals. Mm-hmm. So you look at what you've got, what's going to go off if you don't use it up. And then you write your meal plan, which, like, once you get into the routine of it, you won't have such random stuff, because you'll kind of know what you're doing. And then you say, right, I've got all these ingredients, but I haven't got those other ingredients, so they're going to go on my shopping list. You've got to stick to the list. That's the challenge. Mm-hmm. So once you started using things up more sensibly, and then you might not have so many things that need using up, then you're just going to write a meal plan that you want, and then you're only going to shop to that meal plan in future. So, yeah.
And don't go shopping hungry.
Yeah, don't go shopping hungry. Yeah.
Always dangerous.
Are you finding you're getting through more food at the moment because we're locked down? Like, I'm certainly finding that. It's like, seems like people just eat all the time. Like, there's just meal prep for every meal. Nobody's eating out or at school anymore. Like, how are you coping with that?
Well, so I think for us, things haven't changed that much because I generally did cook most meals. Yeah, there's definitely more snacking going on. And I've got a Facebook group called Reduce Your Food Waste. And a lot of people in there said that they were having problems with like endless snacking. So I wrote a blog post, which I haven't quite published yet. And my theory was, and I was talking to a friend about this today, it's good to have theories, and it's really easy to write a blog post and advise other people, but you know, applying them yourself is another thing. But my theory was, these things can help reduce the endless eating, and it's 3 R's: it's routine, rationing, and rules. So I think the routine is that, like, you have the snacks at the same time every day. So, like, when the kids are little, we used to do snack times at 10 and 3. So you might have breakfast, then snack, then lunch, then snack, then dinner. rather than just, like, endless snacking, or, like, loads of snacking before lunch and then they're not hungry for lunch. And then, so that's routine. And you don't have to do them all. You can do whichever one works for you or a combination of them. And then rationing. Instead of just thinking, I'll just buy a random amount of bananas and then we'll see if we eat them or not, you say, right, everyone is only allowed a banana every other day or a banana a day. Or like you say, like, your snacks for the day are a banana, an apple, a packet of crisps and whatever else. And so you're saying that's the end of it. So you could do that in conjunction with the routine, or you could just say you eat them whenever you like, but when they're finished, they're finished. And then the rules are things like, you can't eat sweets before lunchtime, or like, we only have cakes on weekends, or like whatever your rules want to be. But I think they can kind of set some sort of limit to the general eating.
Yes.
and some sort of order to it. And also, because it is so easy to just end up being on loads of weight, isn't it, when you're at home all the time surrounded by food.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I've done brilliantly at the routine, the rules, or the rationing. I think we're good at the rationing because we've always a bit, because of the meal planning and the shopping lists, that kind of gets you on board with the ration. It's not so much rationing, it's because that, like, it sounds good in that context, but it's more like what I was saying before about a meal plan doesn't need to be perfect. It needs to reflect reality. So the rationing is not about limiting yourself. It sounds like budgeting. It's about saying, this is what's reasonable and this is what we're going to stick to.
Yeah. I think that's what always put me off before, because when I think of meal plans, I think of either like men's health meal plans where they're all like different proteins and vegetables and very balanced and all these unusual ingredients and a million different herbs and stuff, or it's kind of like food that's quite hard to make and sometimes you feel up for it and sometimes you really just feel quite lazy. So I think that sometimes you make things so much harder to get started, don't you?
Yeah, and that's why I didn't start for years. But when I did it, I was like, oh, I don't need to get stressed at 5:30 anymore about what I'm going to make for dinner.
And what about things like to celebrations? So if you had partying or like, how could they potentially be more eco-friendly and do it on a smaller budget?
So I did a whole campaign called Cut the Wrap last Christmas, which it's basically about to get people to stop using disposable wrapping paper, because apparently at Christmas time we use enough wrapping paper in the UK to stretch to the moon, and a lot of it is covered in glitter and plastic and it's not recyclable, so most of it has to go in the bin. But there's so many amazing alternatives to wrapping paper, and like one of my favourite ones is furoshiki, which is like a Japanese fabric wrapping method, and you can tie it up in all different ways. You can roll bottles up in it and make it look like it's a little bag, or you could tie it in knots and make it look like bows type things over a book, or there's loads of, you'd have to watch YouTube videos or look at my blog.
Lush were doing that. I don't know if they still are, but I remember buying some bits in Lush for a friend and I wanted it kind of gift wrapped, and so you buy the material, it was like a little scarf, and they kind of wrapped it up like that. And I thought that was brilliant, and also it meant it was an extra gift for her as like a scarf, so I thought it was lovely.
Well, what I've done, so like most people just give it back to me, and I would generally ask for it back because I don't have like a massive stock of them. But like even once I gave my son one to give a present to a teaching assistant in, and I wrote a note saying, can I have the scarf back? So he took it in and came home with a scarf. I think when loads of people have that kind of thing, then yeah, you could swap and exchange. But it's just something you can reuse again and again. And there's loads of other things like sacks. Instead of wrapping up all your kids' presents, put them in one big sack or a box. And I had like a blog post about treasure hunt ideas. So instead of wrapping presents, hide them and then write clues for where to find them.
Oh, that's really fun.
Actually, I think I put some clues on my blog. There's just loads of different ways that you can wrap up gifts. When my kids were younger, I used to go to all the charity shops and look for presents. I had like a present box, and quite often people would donate things brand new in the packaging, and you pay like a pound for something that was a lot more expensive online. So that was my way I saved money on birthday presents. And then we'd make cards. When my kids were little, like I got really carried away when they were quite little and made loads of like going home presents. But one of the things I did that was just really like the lazy mum's going home present was I went around the house and just like grabbed random items that the kids didn't want. So like, you know, they had like loads of little toys like pigs or dinosaurs.
Yeah, and the little... Yeah, plastic
just had
ones, yeah.
So many of them. I was like, right, we're going to declutter. We picked 20, didn't want any more. And then I'd saved sweets from Halloween that I didn't want my kids to eat. And so we put like a little plastic toy and a sweet. We wrapped up in newspaper and we made a lucky dip out of a box and some shredded newspaper, and kids picked them out on their way home from the party.
Oh, that's a good idea. Mm.
So I just use, because I don't know, when kids are little, they have so much stuff that you don't really want them to have anyway.
A lot of it as well you get rid of, don't you?
Yeah.
I've got stuff out the house now. I can't take to the charity shop because, of course, the charity shops are shut.
Yeah.
But they haven't even used it. It's just, you know, their extended family sending them just stuff that's not quite right but well-meaning, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, presents, I'd either get secondhand or make them. And wrapping, I would wrap with something that wasn't just disposable wrapping paper. And actually, going back to presents, I've done a lot of work to convince people not to give me presents and to not, we do, like in our family, we kind of unilaterally disarmed with presents. So rather than everyone giving everyone a present,
I love it when people make me handmade cards and I keep them and I think they're just amazing. And some of them, like I've got one from like over 10 years ago and I still, and I, every time I see it, it just makes me smile. And they're doing things rather than buying stuff, they're kind of having experiences. I think that's
a gift experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got any ideas around that, Zoe? Sort of how you can do, because I find that easier to do for grown-ups than I do for children. I want my children to just ask me for a wonderful experience, but I struggle to think of ideas of what I could do that would suit them rather than sort of grown-ups are easier to please in that respect, aren't they? I just hate the idea of buying them rubbish that I know they're not really going to appreciate and then is just going to clutter everything up in my flat, basically.
So I guess like an experience for them could be like a membership to the National Trust or the local climbing wall or a farm, any kind of, or yeah, that sort of thing. And if you were going to do it yourself, maybe it could be you or maybe it could be somebody else, but you know, teach them your skills. So like maybe you know someone who's really good at guitar who could give them a guitar lesson, or maybe you know a fire person that could take them around their fire station, or maybe
I want to come too.
Excellent at baking and you can bake it or DIY or I don't know, you can do some sort of
that's a good idea,
experience skills type gift. Yeah.
What about, I don't have kids, but I mean, do you find other parents can be a bit competitive around, this is what I've heard, like, you know, oh, they need the next sort of computer game or this or that, or like, I don't know, how would you?
I don't know if it's the bubble that I'm living in, but I think Brighton's an excellent place to live. And especially the school my kids go to, it's just not like that. And like when my kids were younger, like I say, we were going into all the charity shops and they would do little jobs around the house and earn money. And then they'd spend their money in the charity shops. And like, so one of my kids found a pogo stick for £4 in a charity shop. Turned up at the school gates with it, was the coolest kid at school. Everybody wanted a pogo stick, you know. So like, and actually my other son had bought some, I can't remember what they're called. There's these little balls and you throw them and they turn into little characters. And his friend came around and he loved them, and he can't buy them anymore because there's new versions of them, but they weren't as good as the old ones. And so my son actually ended up giving him his friend some for his birthday.
Oh,
because he really liked that. And so I've not felt any pressure from anyone at school through my kids at all. And they've sort of, they've been able, and this is what I found as well for me, like I was saying about free cycle right at the beginning, I don't know if I did miss it, but I feel like being eco-friendly and saving money has given me access to far more abundance than I had before. Because if I, if the kids wanted something like a pogo stick and they were going to buy it new, how much would that cost? I don't know, 20 quid?
Yeah, I actually looked, they're quite expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. And my son got one for £4. So they've been able to buy things and get things that they wouldn't have been able to get otherwise. So I never went to charity shops when I was a kid, but I did go to car boot sales. I don't know why there's some sort of different attitude to that.
There is, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that people think that charity shops are full of dead people's clothes, perhaps. But what's happened is because of fast fashion and because there's so much stuff being generated all the time, that it's not like that. People are giving things that they've barely used because they're overwhelmed. And going back to the sort of parties and things, that people get like at Christmas, they get given so many gifts that they don't want them, and they end up straight at the charity shop or on eBay or something, or even after a children's party, you know, like they just might be overwhelmed with what they've got. So that's why you can end up finding some really good finds in charity shops that have hardly been touched. And another reason why the stuff in charity shops is really good is because we have way, way more things that are donated to charity than can actually be used in this country. So it's something ridiculous. A really high percentage of clothes and goods are actually shipped overseas to be sold in Africa or wherever.
And even a lot of those actually go on heaps as well and don't get used. And
they go
in seams. And yeah, it's just never ending.
All the best quality stuff is saved to be sold in the charity shops. Yeah. So you can get some incredible bargains in the charity shops. I just hardly spend any money on clothes at all. And I mean, that's not the only way I would get clothes. I'd also get clothes, like I said, on FreeCycle, or like I've done clothes swaps. That's another way to get clothes where you don't even pay anything.
How do clothes swaps work then? Sort of, how does that actually, because you have to be quite evenly matched, I guess, with the other people from a size point of view, or how does that work?
Now, I've had clothes swap parties, and I think the first time you do it with people, it's generally fine, because if they've never had a declutter or a clear out, they've probably got clothes in all different sizes. Especially if you've had children and you've sort of gone up and gone down, and you know. But I think, yeah, you just invite enough people so that there are enough sizes. And what I found is, I think what people worry is that it won't be fair, that they'll give more than they get. And so some people like to have some sort of system of one in, one out, or three in, three out, or something like that. But whenever I've done a clothes swap, people are just like, do you know what? I just want to get rid of all these clothes. And I always end up with a pile at the end of it, which I then take to charity. So I've never done any rules over the clothes swaps. It's bring what you like, take what you like. And everyone's been incredibly happy with what they're happy that they've decluttered their clothes, and they're happy that they've got something new to them to wear.
And I know that especially, you know, you guys are aware in Brighton, there's lots of kind of boutique-y shops that do like vintage, basically secondhand clothing, and they really ramp the price up. So there are those sorts of things as well that you can kind of do if you want things that are a bit more, I don't know, fashionable or kind of in that bohemian way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could go to those shops, but like you say, then they'd be a lot more expensive. So it's a lot more fun to go through the charity shops and find your own. Actually, there's a charity shop here that's called Emmaus, and it's this amazing shop, which is in an old convent. And they've got a whole room full of vintage clothes just dedicated to them. So it's worth looking at the charity shops. Yeah.
The only thing I find with vintage clothes, there seems to be a lot of polyester, doesn't there?
I suppose, yeah.
I find that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the shoes.
I mean, I'm not really amazing. Big on. What's that? The shoes?
The shoes, yes. Sort of those old shoes. I think because I've got little feet and everyone seems to have littler feet in the olden days. I can buy some nice little feet shoes.
It's always quite good. Sylvie, do you have any tips? So the only issue I have with, because I do go to secondhand shops.
Yeah.
Sometimes they, it's the smell. I'm quite sensitive, and sometimes I'll wash something a couple of times and I still can't get this damp smell out. And do you have any tips around that?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean, because what they actually do is they spray all the clothes in the charity shop with some clothing freshener thing, and it's really annoying because it just makes them smell awful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, like, air is a brilliant air freshener. Vinegar's a good deodorizer, and bicarbonate of soda is a good deodorizer. You could just literally put some bicarbonate of soda on it for a bit and see if that helps.
Okay.
Just like lie it down
And just dry.
Just kind of sprinkle it on.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can use bicarbonate of soda as an odor deodorizer all over the place. Like, you can put some in the bottom of your bin, or put a bowl of it in the fridge, or put some next to your toilet. And some, like, I actually use it as deodorant. So I don't really use deodorant anymore. You're going to think I'm really stinky now.
No. But there are some good alternatives, aren't there, that are natural.
I know, but I just don't even use it, because I think a lot of products, you think you need them, but you don't actually, because unless you actually smell, why do you need to use deodorant? I don't know. You don't. And I think, like, I used to use lip salve. I read this sort of conspiracy website about lip salve, about how it's got crystals in it that dry out your lips, so you're constantly putting it on. So, like, deodorant, do you actually need it if you don't smell of anything? Or is it just you've got into the habit of it, or is it doing something to you that makes you feel like you need it? I don't know.
Last year I stopped using sort of antiperspirant deodorant.
Yeah.
And I sort of started off with those salt crystals, but I found that a bit faffy, because you have to make sure your armpit's just the right amount of wet. But then I switched to, there's a Pit Rock roll on, just
putting
that, and it's amazing because it smells like how you expect a deodorant to smell, but you just whip it on after a shower and it's great. And yeah, that works really well. I can't imagine. It's just so easy to replace a normal deodorant like that. It just becomes habit, doesn't it? You don't even think about it anymore.
But like, I only, like, if I've got stinky underarms, I would put a little bit of bicarbonate of soda on and then wipe it off carefully, because bicarbonate soda is quite abrasive. So you don't want to leave any on. You want to make sure it's all off. But literally, you could smell your underarm and then put, well, if you want to do this, and then put some on, and then keep, like, it just takes the smell away. It's really weird. But also, another thing I would do is just literally wash with soap and water under my arms. I think I found, if I'm not eating very well or, like, drinking loads of alcohol, that's when you can get stinky. But if you've got a good diet, I'm not saying I do always at all, you're less smelly. So I don't think that these products, it's like face creams and things, you know, all these products are sort of like putting a sticking plaster on a problem, whereas actually having a good diet will make you not need deodorant. And like, I've read loads of stuff about sugar being really bad for your skin. So actually it can also mean you don't need to put on moisturizers and cleansers and all this rubbish that people put on their faces. So I'm like, I pretty much don't use anything, basically.
Wow,
it
does make a big difference, doesn't it? I think in the reverse, like, a quicker experiment is if you eat really badly and go out drinking, like, how bad you look. You could do the good experiment for like a few months, or you could do the bad experiment and see, like, if it goes the other way.
And obviously no one's perfect all the time. And I'm definitely not, but I just feel like, unless I actually smell, I'm not going to use deodorant because I don't need to.
What would be your sort of top tips then for someone who perhaps has lost their job or is deciding during this period, right, I actually want to cut down my hours, I want to spend more time with my family, if they sort of readjusting their priorities, like, where should they start? Where can they make the cuts, Zoe, that are going to make a real difference to their finances?
Well, I would say, before I can sort of advise on that, what the best place for them to start is to do a finance tracker. I think what they need to do is work out what they're spending their money on, where's it going. And like, we do that monthly. We've got like, it looks like a budget list, because we'll have all the different things we're spending our money on and what we expect to spend it on each month. But it's not made up. It's based on reality. It's based on like an average of what we've spent over 6 months or 12 months. And so they need to sort of work out what they're spending money on to be able to work out what they could do differently. So if they're spending loads and loads of money on takeaways, then it's pretty obvious that they could just stop doing that. If they're spending loads of money on TV subscriptions, you know, like, obviously those things aren't necessarily going to be eco-friendly ones, but you can look at everything. You can look at your energy supplier, your phone provider, your you could maybe look at the, if you're not on a green energy supplier and if you've been on your energy supplier for a long time, it's likely that you're paying way over the odds. So switching on all your kind of subscription costs can save you a lot of money. And then it kind of drills down into the how much you're spending on presents a year, how much you're spending on clothes a year, how much you're spending on food. Well, like, or you can do it on a monthly basis, but ideally you look at it over a year and then split it up into months, because there's certain costs that only happen once a year, like Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Does this take a long time, Zoe, to do, or would you like block out a couple hours or an afternoon to sit down and blitz it? How would you recommend sort of going about it?
Well, no, it's not going to be a quick exercise, and you probably don't have to do it perfectly to start off with. You just need some kind of, like, I just start off somewhere and just roughly work out how much you're spending on each area, and ideally, like, you could then each month track over time what you're spending on money on, and then at the end of that you'll have a much better picture. If you've got an idea of what your income is and what your outgoings are, then you know whether you're spending more than you're earning or whether you're spending less than you're earning, and whether you've got any savings power. So if you wanted to change your life and quit the job or whatever, or stay at home with the kids more, you need to be spending less than you're earning. And it doesn't matter how you do it, it's just that you've got to work out how to get there and where you want to make those cutbacks. And doing it over a course of a year means you can even out your cash flows. So you're going to have to look at how you can do that. And there are loads of ways you can do that, but you don't have to do any of them. So if you absolutely love spending half your money on clothes, well, you can do that if you can find out how to spend an awful lot less on something else.
I suppose also quite often we buy stuff to give us that buzz, and then we don't have that buzz anymore. So I think it's about actually changing our habits in terms of psychologically what we're doing.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's a good idea to spend half your money on clothes, but it's more like it's okay to have luxuries. It's okay to spend a bit more on something that is really, like, maybe it's that you want to buy a really nice new item of clothing once a month, and that's okay. But it's not all right if you're buying them every single day. Yeah. So you're right that some people maybe are spending too much money in a certain area because it's compensating in some way and making them feel better about something, and that obviously is a problem. But then they'd identify that, and a lot of people don't want to do the budget, or not the budget, the tracker, because they don't want to know what they're spending, because it's a bit too scary and they don't want to see what the reality is. But then when you do it, then you can see that what direction you're headed in. If you carry on spending more than you're earning, you're headed for debt, or you're headed for potentially losing a house, or whatever it is. You're going in the wrong direction, away from everything you want. So you can sort of be motivated to cut back on things by going in a different direction and say, well, I would like this different future, so I'm going to change things. But actually, having said, like, it's about doing that. The other thing is that the really easy cutbacks are not wasting anything. So that is, it's not wasting anything and making the most of what you have. So if you're currently wasting loads of energy, or like by leaving lights on and not turning things off at nighttime, leaving them on standby, or just cooking really inefficiently, there's just so many ways you could save, or leaving doors open instead of keeping heat. There's just millions of ways you could save energy. You know, you're not missing out at all. Waste is one side of it, but it's also making the most of what you have. So if you're, like, for example, we've got TV subscriptions and my son's constantly going, can I pay extra for this other program? So, like, it's like, but we've got all these programs, let's watch those ones. Or, like, if you're you've got loads of games in the cupboard, use your games. Or if you've got sports equipment at home but you're paying to go to a gym, use your sports equipment at home. Like, and making the most of what you have isn't just about what you have, it's about what other people have got. It's about the fact that there's a library you can borrow books from, or, like, now we can't go to the library, but there's online library services, and you can look on Freegal or Freecycle or other free websites and see what other people don't want. What could you make use of? Like, in our garden, like, my husband this year has started making some planters, but for years we've just had this an old bath that we got off Freecycle that we're growing like courgettes and things in, because it's free and it's a great size planter. I found it made me much more creative about thinking about different ways you can get things. And I also said, I think all the ones that being eco-friendly and saving money is not about living less. It feels very much like a life of abundance, because once you realize about the other ways to get things, you realize there's so much going to waste from other people, because so much that people don't want, and there's so many ways you can cut back on waste that can save you so much money that you can really change the picture from spending too much to spending a lot less and being able to save up for the alternative future that you want.
It sounds very empowering, actually. I think getting control again, and because I think certainly I have in the past just kind of bought stuff without really thinking, and then you look back and you think, oh, I wish I hadn't. Whereas this seems purposeful, and you're more in control.
Yeah,
so very positive.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I go and buy clothes from a charity shop now, so I can get as many as I want, but I know I'm not going to be able to overspend in the charity shop. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, it feels like the ethos really fits with the sort of minimalism ethos as well, of appreciating what you have.
Definitely.
Not having excess, like you have enough. There's sort of a satisfaction in that, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, the reason so I definitely agree with that. I think minimalism goes in a different direction there, because it's very much about restricting what you do have. Whereas you can do all this and have loads of stuff in your house.
You've tried the minimal thing, it will never work for me. Like, I need to have pictures up on the wall. Yeah. I need to stick things up like I'm still a student. It needs to be, you know, books everywhere. That's just, that's just me. But minimal is too restrictive.
Yeah, but it's taking the best of it, isn't it? So, I think I wrote a blog post on my blog about how going zero waste, being a minimalist and being a vegan, they're all good theories, but take them too far and it's extreme, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, take them too far in any direction and they, when I say extreme, I mean they can sort of go back on themselves. So if you're like a zero waster at all costs to reduce plastic, but then you're travelling around all over the place and spending more on fuel to find those products, well, that's not good for the environment, is it? And if you're a vegan at all costs, but that means that you're in a room and food's going to be thrown out, well, food waste isn't good for the environment. And minimalism at all costs, I'm not going to have that in there, then you're just throwing things away to get them out of your house.
And rebuying them when you need them.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's difficult with those kinds of terms, because you need them to have those concepts and those ideas, because without them it sounds a bit wishy-washy and you don't really know what they're talking about. But if you say I'm a minimalist or I'm a vegan or I'm a zero waster and you don't consider that it's not always the best answer, then it can become a bit extreme. Yeah.
It's maybe using them as tools when and where, assessing the situation in the context. I like that idea.
People wanted to find out more, Zoe, about how they can live an eco-thrifty life. What's the best, where are the best kind of resources? I presume your blog would be a good place to start.
Yeah, so I have my blog, www.ecothriftyliving.com, and I've also written a book called Eco-Thrifty Living, same name as the blog, which is an introduction to how to save money in the environment. And the book's really good because it's pulled together everything I've learned over the last 8 years, whatever it is, 9 years of blogging about it. And so, like, if you went to the blog, you could have a look around and see all the latest articles and maybe sift through all the stuff. So the book brings it all together, and I sort of brought it together in a coherent way. And I think there's 11 chapters in the book, and the first chapter is about food waste, and then there's chapters about kids and special occasions, gardening, all kinds of different topics that you might need to rethink what you're doing. So yeah, really, you could just go through that book and think, I've suggested lots of potential changes that you can make in all these different areas, and it's not about you must do this, this is an option, it may or may not work for you, you might come up with a different answer, but it just gets you thinking about things differently. Come and join my food waste group, which is on Facebook. It's called Reduce Your Food Waste UK, so it's where people share questions about what can I do with my leftover carrots or something like that, and their food waste rescue recipe. There's lots of things that use up all crazy wacky things like potato peels and chickpea water. And
oh wow, okay.
Things like that.
Chickpea yeah. water?
Oh, it's aquafaba.
Aquafaba, what's that?
You can use it in cakes instead of eggs, can't you? I think, yeah.
Oh, isn't, wow, you can okay. use it like egg whites. You can literally whip it up into white peaks like you can with egg whites. You can make meringues and you can make chocolate
beef. Oh, and cakes. Oh, you can make chickpea cake, which I love. Chocolate chickpea cake without any eggs. That's good.
Oh, my God, I'm going to have to make all this stuff this weekend.
The small changes add up to a big change.
Right, my mum's calling.
I've been chat for ages. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, that's brilliant.
Curious Talks with Leif and Elfie.
Follow Leif and Elfie on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook.